Yeah, that's a really powerful question.
That's a beautiful question.
That is a very wise question, Lauren.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the American West and beyond. The Right Question is supported in part by Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio, and by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. I'm Lauren Korn, speaking with the poet Lauren Camp, author of In Old Sky, Poems Inspired by the Grand Canyon, a collection born of Lauren's residency as the fourth astronomer in residence at Grand Canyon National Park. This book is the first book of poetry published by the Grand Canyon Conservancy. Currently serving as the Poet Laureate of New Mexico, Lauren spent an immersive month exploring the natural darknesses of the Grand Canyon, and the collection includes beautiful, vivid color photos capturing the area's landscapes, both terrestrial and beyond. Lauren, thank you so much for joining me to talk about this collection. Welcome to The Right Question.
Thank you, and I'm delighted to be here.
I think to start, I want to talk about the Grand Canyon National Park's Astronomer in Residence program. This is a program that facilitated the writing of this collection, In Old Sky. Tell me about that program and what drew you to apply to it in the first place.
The Astronomer in Residence program is based off the very popular National Parks Artist in Residence programs that are really throughout the country. This program is designed specifically for focus on astronomy and pristine night skies and natural darkness. And really, there's almost no better place to find that than the Grand Canyon. The park itself has worked very hard to make to bring down any sort of light pollution and to make it an international dark sky park. And so this was sort of an outgrowth of and collaborative with that effort. I saw the call for applications, and I never would have applied if it had said strictly astronomers, but it said writers. And I think it even said poets. And so that caught my attention, and I thought, why not? I'll try. And that's how it happened.
Is there a difference, or what is the difference, Lauren, between an astronomer and a poet?
Well, I can't answer from the perspective of a scientist astronomer who spends a lot of time, I believe, crunching data. But I think we're both looking. We're both trying to pull together the mysteries of the world in our different ways.
What did it feel like to be someone coming to the Grand Canyon, not to recreate, but as someone tasked to do something, to write, to program events for visitors, to use your time in the canyon in ways that those same visitors were not and didn't have to?
What a great question. It actually turned out to be a relief in a way. I had a month, so I wasn't in a hurry to see everything. I had time, which meant I could look at a little or a lot or process, which I think when we go on trips, when we go to incredible places, we don't usually have this kind of time. It's not spacious like this. And so it gave me a chance to really just settle in and see what I wanted to see. Also, it was August, and so it was extraordinarily hot. And as soon as I realized I don't have to be out in the middle of the day when everyone else is out, all the thousands of other people, that was kind of a gift, very much a gift, because I could be out in the early morning or at night or both. When people generally were abandoning the rim of the canyon and their views because they were not able to see anymore. So it quieted down, it cooled down. It gave me a chance to feel like I was in one of the more populated places all by myself.
You said that you were able to come out and explore the canyon during times that other visitors might not be out, or not as many visitors might be out. Are you willing to read a poem from In Old Sky? Will you read The Dawn Was Full of Water?
Gladly. The dawn was full of water. After all that climbing, I didn't have a nuance or a thought, only another abyss to bridge. I had climbed down hours and millennia and was still a long way from the improbable bottom. There was no dignity, just the cage and ministrations of body. A haze of biting bugs returned me to earth. My mind was another step, the infinite path. Already I saw we can do more than we expect. I arrived, as you have. We have all done something hard and alone in impossible dark. And if you emerged still smelling of grief, or barely able to lift off that yellow boat you had climbed into, that yowling exhaustion, I hope someone clapped for you, watched you cross the black bridge. Where had you been? They already knew. When was it? A time only beginning its work. And who were you then, when you were full of such trudging? Maybe someone handed you something cold and sure to mark the inexorable effort. Maybe even refilled it. Someone else gave you a rickety bed to rest. Someone might have, and someone else might.
Lauren, time is addressed in this poem, and in many, if not all of the poems in this collection. How did your relationship to time change during your time in the canyon? And turning back to this poem, I'm also compelled to ask you what those changing ideas of time have to do with the solitude that you were embracing and embodying during this residency.
The solitude was so interesting because I was surrounded by people. Right? I was there by myself, but I wasn't, you know, without someone close, dear, whatever, familiar to me. But there were hundreds of people around at any given time. They were speaking many languages. It was like being surrounded by the world, right?
Wow.
Or by, you know, many, many cultures, many families, many different groupings of people. I don't mind being by myself. I like it. It gives me time to think. I live on a dirt road. I'm already used to a kind of quiet that is very appealing to me. I wasn't lonely and I wasn't overwhelmed by the people either. And maybe that was because I was out at night, as I said. I was very out, very often out at night, like almost every night. Time shows up in a few different ways. I had a month, so it's that kind of time, that kind of open-ended time. But there's also the time that the canyon represents, going back millennia as you climb deeper down into it, which I did. And you can see the striations and the lines of time as you move down through it, or even as you look from the top. And then there's the different time of the universe and the cosmos. So time is showing up all over the place for me, from my immediate day to eons ago to, you know, the dawn of time, the start of time.
If we're talking about time, I want to turn to the poem Time and Time to Configure. In this poem, you write, "I asked strangers the difference between night and darkness." My impulse, Lauren, is to ask you that question back to you, to have you tell me the difference between night and darkness. But I think that's the joy that your readers, the readers of this collection, come to by reading it. And listeners, I highly, highly recommend you do. So I'm going to ask you something adjacent, which is, how did your observations of the sky, the night sky in particular, change the way that you think about other forms of darkness? You've written of grief, for example, in The Dawn Was Full of Water. So how did it change your conception of darkness, and specifically in relation to other forms of darkness?
I've written a lot about darkness as an emotional form, about grief, about loss, about various darker changes, issues of any sort. And maybe that's kind of the whole spectrum. I've now buried two parents. I've written about that kind of darkness. Being at the canyon was a sort of joyful kind of darkness, an open-ended, positive darkness, dark without that tinged, what does dark mean? In this case, dark only meant a kind of cool. Since the days were hot, it was automatically cooler. It was emptier. It was quieter. It was less invasive than the sun. And I live in the desert. I love the sun, but I also love the dark. So by the time I left the canyon, I left with such a strong sense of darkness as a friend, as a presence that I loved to be in. And my adjacent answer to your adjacent question, or desired question of what is the difference between night and dark, is that came out of me asking hundreds of visitors to the canyon to respond to that question and several other statements or questions, and then pulling those answers, responses together into what I called an epic poem that is in the book. So that's sort of my little reflection on that question built into this poem, Time and Time to Configure.
I want to come back to these ideas of darkness and night, but you just spoke to this epic poem or this long poem in the collection. It's something like a cento, you said, created with hundreds of responses to these questions, titled Look Up, Look Out, Look Infinite. Tell me about that impulse to bring these visitors not only into the space of the book as subjects, because you do mention some visitors and speaking with them or interacting with them as subjects, but also bringing them into this particular poem as authors in this way.
Yeah, I love this idea. And I've actually taken it and done it now all across the state as part of my Poet Laureate project. But doing it at the Grand Canyon was my first time doing it on a large scale, like really large scale. It was halfway through the month, and I had been writing darkness without using that term very much after a while, trying to eradicate the word dark from my poems after a while, because that's an easy impulse to just go there. So I began to start figuring out how else, what other senses could I use to describe darkness, what other language, what other angles. And then I realized I could also use other language, other people's language. And the best way to do that was to put it out to every person willing to contribute. And so we set up boxes in each of the visitor centers and Grand Canyon Conservancy shops, and put out cards and asked people to just write these little responses. They were tiny index cards, and people did it. I didn't know what I was going to get. And I got hundreds of responses, and all the language in that epic poem is from those responses. None of it is mine. Obviously, there's a part of me in it because I was putting it together, but I really loved that I got to work with all those different ways of expressing darkness and seeing darkness, feeling darkness.
You're listening to A Conversation with Poet Lauren Camp. I'm Lauren Korn. This episode of The Right Question is supported by Montana Book Company, located in downtown Helena, Montana since 1978, offering new books for all ages, vinyl records, and community activism. Delivery in Helena and shipping is available online at mtbookco.com. You may have answered this question indirectly earlier, but you said when speaking about this idea of dark and darkness versus, say, emotional darkness, that you liked being in it, that you so appreciated the depth of the darkness. I'm maybe reading between the lines, but that you felt some degree of safety in the darkness there. And I'm wondering how or if you considered gender about writing from a female perspective when writing about the dark, about the night sky, because I think, and maybe this is presumptive, but there's certainly a connotation for women in the dark being something other than safe. So I'm wondering how you considered the gender aspect or the gendered dark in this collection.
Absolutely. I felt very safe there. And I think if I had been given a month in a city focused on night skies, any city probably, I would not have felt safe like that. There was something about being there. And also when I was out, I thought about it a lot because when I was out, it was when the canyon was not very inhabited by humans. There were other critters and other sounds and other things going on. The bats were out and the birds were out. And, you know, there was a lot of other stuff going on, but why did I feel safe? I don't know. But I did. And I think that's hard to find, especially from the perspective of the female gender. It's hard to feel safe and comfortable in the dark by yourself. But I felt, I don't know, I felt powerful, I felt at ease.
I'm hoping you might read another poem. Will you read the poem Instructions on the Sky?
Instructions on the Sky. I went back to the stars, their inner splash, their hook and flight. I sat in the brave dark, perhaps to shuck the world's usual chemistry, its thick leftover charge. I wanted to score onto me the visible, no tether to such dimension. Is this then a poem about survival? If so, it must be always beginning. Let me squeeze my uses into a pocket as I enter the growing notational hoop of the heavens. Let this be against what we've built, that we've heavily titled with the long side of lights, the cantilevers around us, factories, blue lots. How hungry we seem to be for the peck and quarrel of illumination. I don't know about you, but I desire the shock of the whispers of gloaming and gloom. I think if we focus on this and the purples born from it, we'll see glimmers all the way through.
Oh, I love the end of that poem. I love that poem, but I love the end of it. How hungry we seem to be for the peck and quarrel of illumination. This reminded me of the introduction of, or the foreword to this collection, written by a park ranger in the park, Raider Lane. He wrote, "These poems do not tokenize the stars." And I'm reminded of that moment because I feel like you're speaking not of the dark, but of the light in this poem. So, Lauren, will you talk about how this collection, again, so much about darkness and night, how it addresses light?
I learned a lot while I was there. I mean, during the day, I was inside as often as I could be because I could be inside. And I was out at night. I was out at dusk. I was out for the hours afterward. That was when it was comfortable to walk. I walked a lot. I think I walked about 120 miles that month. It was a lot. So when I was inside, part of what I was doing was reading about light pollution. And what I came away from that with is not that light is bad. I mean, I don't believe that light is bad. I have written a huge amount about daylight, and that's a certain kind of light. But our human-made light, you know, our lighting of parking lots and buildings and things like that, pathways, but especially parking lots when we don't really need that kind of light. That light that's shining up and out is destroying our immediate ability to see something larger than us, something far more important, really, than us, and that is the night skies. Also, it's unnecessary. And I wouldn't say that those parking lots should be dark, that those office buildings should be dark, that different streets should be dark, just that there's a right amount of light. There's a right time for that light, and that too much also prevents us on the ground from being safe. I don't know if that makes sense, but if you stare into a bright light and then look away, whatever is in the dark is not visible to you. So the danger is really easy to hide in those darker places. So I came away with this strong sense of how we can light our cities, our societies, our spaces that we exist in and that we, you know, travel between, so that they are safe, so that they are comfortable, so that they show us where our feet need to go without overdoing it.
I was really, really taken by the way that you've written about the movement of the sky and of its darkness in these poems. Not necessarily of like the movement of clouds, but the way that the sky and the dark shifts. It breathes, it parks, it builds, it pleasures. I guess I'm curious about the way that you considered your moving body in relationship to the canyon, which is, for all intents and purposes, static. The canyon itself is static, despite the many bodies moving around it and on it. And then the sky, which you've also written in motion. So I hope that there's something in that ramble that resonates with you about placement, maybe, and where you are in relationship to static and moving bodies.
My favorite time to write about, really my very favorite time at the canyon, was after the sun went down, you know, after the big splash of gorgeousness of the sun going down, then all the people would leave. You know, they'd come out for that because it's extraordinary. Then all the people would leave and I would stay still, really static, you know, in one place, and watch the light. And the light show was quieter, but it wasn't dark. It wasn't like, okay, this is just a sheet of dark. It was shifting. It was moving, and it was so much fun to watch that, to watch how this little strip over here does this thing and moves, and the orange moves over here, and the whatever it was, it just kept moving. And the longer I watched, the more I got to see.
Would you mind reading another poem? Would you read A Future by Seeing?
A Future by Seeing. I grew up in attics, invisible keening, cracked wooden slats and doors calculated to hook. So many witches made me to see them. Each night I went up spiraling stairs toward that republic of ghosts, then late flung sheets with my horrid suspicions. I had to fix my mind to the implacable, opulent bleakness. I couldn't even take light when it slanted, dispelled and dank through waste senseless windows. Outdoors tonight, the musty air fills with bats in an ongoing grapple. I stand as they round an ordinary plundering routine. Clouds raise up their ceremony and conjure astronomical houses. I have come to love the suspension when the sun topples and trues to a lattice of moon. The dark parks on top of me, where geology whittles the scarp. This is the best, seeing what happens after.
Thank you. We've covered a lot in this collection. We've heard a few of the poems. Is there anything else you want our listeners to know about In Old Sky or the process behind it or your experience writing it that we haven't already talked about?
The person who was in charge of the residencies when I got to the canyon, she was brand new in her role, and we met when she moved to Grand Canyon, which was maybe a week and a half into my residency. And I told her that I like the dark. I've really always liked the dark. I haven't always felt safe in it. Sometimes I masked what I felt through, I don't know, like when I was in college and I would walk around in the dark, I wasn't really safe, but I liked being out there. I liked moving at the same time that it was dark, like being in motion. And she looked at me and said, you know, she had moved from Chicago, and she said, like, what do you mean? And I said, it's great to be out there. It's amazing to just exist in it and be surrounded by it and held by it. And I think, I know we talked about this, but I think I want to make a case for trying again, for anybody who's afraid of the dark, to try a little, because there's also something really magical about it.
Yeah. Lauren, thank you so much for joining me today. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you. This has been fantastic. I really appreciate you.
That was poet Lauren Camp, author of In Old Sky, published by the Grand Canyon Conservancy and available now. You've been listening to The Right Question. To listen to this conversation again, to share it with friends, or to find out more about Lauren, head to mtpr.org. This episode was produced by Chris Moyles and me. I'm your host, Lauren Korn. Chris also engineered this episode. The artwork for The Right Question was designed by Molly Russell. Funding for The Right Question is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting this program since 2008. And thank you for listening. The Right Question is a production of Montana Public Radio.